Welcome to the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If your job involves working with or influencing people's behavior, this podcast offers invaluable insights into what makes people tick. Through personal interviews that are thoughtful and surprising, we explore the full range of the roots to people smarts that can help you make or break your own career. My name is Marie Gervais, and with a PhD in culture and learning in the workplace and my own cultural journey, I bring the mysteries of human beings at work around the world to you. Through conversations with very diverse people, examining the groups they were born into and the ones they chose to belong to, my podcast takes a deep dive into why people do what they do and how they belong. Hone your skills to manage others and to be a better human being at work with the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. And now for today's episode. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections listeners. Today, I have a most wonderful speaker. Her name is McCall Spiegelman, and she is a soul coach and a Beacons of Change founder and the author of the book, Becoming Soulful, Six Keys for Profound Transformation, which she comes to through her work as a social worker and as a certified professional coach. She's the founder of Beacons of Change and the Soulful Healer Method, which helps women and healing professionals to have a soul-fueled life lived at full power. McCall combines deep expertise and timeless wisdom with a comprehensive methodology enriched by a variety of traditional and holistic therapeutic tools. This powerful blend ignites transformation and growth. She is a certified professional coach, Reiki master, medical intuitive, and has many other qualifications. And I'm very excited to speak with her today. Hello, McCall.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here, Marie.
I really liked your book. It was lovely to read and to learn from. And of course, it aligns with so much of the things that I do. And we did a little book exchange, which was lovely. Thank you.
Yes, I love your book as well. And there's so much alignment there.
So tell me a little bit about you. I mean, you must have been born somewhere. You must have a family. Everybody comes from somewhere. So tell us a little bit about you and how you became eventually all of these wonderful things that I just mentioned.
Yes, sure. And thank you for mentioning my book. I just wanted to say that my book was released in the summer of 2024, and it's a dream come true for me. You know, I feel that this book is my soul on paper. And I just wanted to mention one thing about the book and then answer your question. That
sure.
Even though I wrote the book for professionals, for therapists, for mental health professionals, because I see that there's so much need in the world, there's so much anxiety and depression and just wars and world events, and there's a need. So I think that the next evolution of my work is to empower professionals, but not only professionals. I have a dream and a mission really to inspire leaders, any leaders, whether they're professionals or they're leading their personal life or they're leading communities, to inspire leaders to bring their soul to work, to take their soul to them, whatever they do, and to lead from their souls. And I think that this calling or this mission that is so sacred to me is really immersed from lacking all that and lacking connection with my soul. And I'll get to it in a minute, but I currently live in the US in Atlanta, Georgia with my husband. We have two young adult kids that already left the nest, but I am originally from Israel. I grew up in Israel and we left Israel a little bit more than 20 years ago, lived in Germany for 2 years and then moved to the US. And in the US, I lived in Atlanta, then moved to New York, then came back to Atlanta. So there is a lot of moving in my life and just living in different places. But I think that what's very meaningful in my journey growing up in Israel was actually the fact that my mother was born in Romania at the beginning of World War II. And she and her parents had to hide from the Germans who came to search her house. And they were obligated to wear the yellow patch. And when her parents decided to leave Romania, she had to leave everything. They have to leave everything behind them, including her toys and dolls, and just run away in the middle of the night just after she turned 4. And when they arrived in Israel with the immigration ship to a very lacking situation where they had to live on food stamps and everything, my mother was only 5 and a half. And I mentioned that because my mother, who had to run from the Holocaust and come to Israel, then my dad was born in Israel, but his parents came from Germany. And I think that there's something about being born into a family, especially my mother, that had to survive so much trauma when she was so young, that is really at the core of what led me to be who I am today and do the work that I'm doing.
It's a very interesting combination of the parental experiences, isn't it? Bringing together almost the two opposites, but probably united under the same religion, am I guessing correctly?
Yes.
United through the same religion, but coming together, one from Germany, coming to Israel, and you also went to Germany. So it's a really interesting trajectory.
Right. When my husband and I decided to move to Germany for 2 years, it was for a job. We were just looking for my husband for a job to be out of Israel for a few years just to get some air and feel safer. So there are many people, even in my family, that were judging us for wanting to move to Germany. There are people who, especially because my mother had to run away from the Holocaust, but for us, it really felt like
a pilgrimage.
To choose to live in Germany and then to have so many meaningful conversations with people in Germany that said, you know, it's so comforting for us to know that you chose to be here and we want to change history, and we wish we could, we can't, but we really want to make the world better. But I think that the fact that I was born into a family with so much trauma, and during that time, there was no awareness around trauma or treating trauma. And I think that my mother, who started her life as a survivor, she wasn't able to change her survivor role. And I grew up with a mother that was numbing her emotions and disconnected completely, not even being aware. And her whole life, she was really suffering. She was very bitter. And I grew up feeling unheard and unseen and misunderstood and unaccepted and not feel like I belong. And of course, you know, now as an adult and especially as a professional, I know she did the best she can. And I know she had so much trauma. But it doesn't change the fact that that's how I grew up. So I think I had this unconscious desire to liberate myself from the trauma and the suffering that I was born into, at least energetically.
Well, you already started on that path, but I'm wondering if you can share a couple of incidents from your childhood that stand out for you. You started to talk a little bit about this. It can be something you experienced negatively, but it can also be something you experienced positively or something neutral, but that just stands out in your mind and you don't need to know the reason why. But can you think of a couple of incidents from your childhood that you think were formative for you?
Right. So, you know, I think I inherited many good qualities or inspiring qualities from my mother, who was very creative and very organized. And she was a giver, you know, always in service of others. So I inherited a lot of that. But if I think about an incident that actually reflects living in a household where expressing emotion was not encouraged, and even my mother used to punish us for expressing emotions. So I remember one time when I was maybe 9 or 10 years old and we're in a wedding and we're sitting around the table, my family, and there are people around. And I don't remember why I was very unhappy, but something bothered me. And I remember starting to cry and just being miserable. And my mother was so pissed at me because she really wanted me to project like being the little girl sitting and like, you know, what I would call today, like fake positivity. And I felt like I'm not allowed to be myself. And I remember a moment when she actually pinched me under the table, when somebody walked to the table and she said, just smile, stop crying. You're not a little girl, just smile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in your book, you talk about soul diminishing, soul sustaining. And I think that's just an example of how I felt. And of course, it wasn't my mother's intention, but it doesn't change the fact that's how I felt. Mm-hmm. I felt that my soul is being diminished, like in using your own words. And I think that's one example that reflect that. And then another very meaningful experience I had in my childhood was actually when I was 15, and my dad was sent to live in New York and work. He was sent by the company that worked for the Israel industry, Aircraft, and we lived in New York for 3 years. So I went to high school in New York, and moving from Israel to New York in a time where, I mean, now Israel and America, there's so many similarities, but back then we didn't have any like tall buildings and big malls. We didn't even have a mall in Israel, like shopping malls or stuff. And I remember the cultural shock that I had when we moved to New York, and we lived there for 3 years. But I think that leaving Israel and living in New York opened something for me that in my adult life translated to traveling the world. Like after getting married, we traveled to India and to Nepal and to Thailand. And then we decided to move to Germany and move to the US. And I think that there was an opening that was created back then when my family was sent to live in the US.
Interesting. I've had other people say that to me too. I think going across the ocean has a significant impact on how you feel about things. And the other way around too, for example, Black Americans who went and lived in Europe and were celebrated and treated like, you know, it was really important and what they did was really good. And no matter what their profession was, they got good treatment from the Europeans. And when they came back and they were treated like dirt, it was such a horrible return experience to think this is what I'm going back to. That was certainly the experience of a lot of Black soldiers from the US. And so they had an opening going to Europe and you had an opening coming to the US. It's something about that ocean crossing that's significant.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Not sure what it is, but maybe it's because it's so far away.
Yeah, and I think it's different. It's a different culture and it's a different mentality. And there is an opening that happens when you travel across the ocean.
Mm-hmm. And experience a very, very different culture from what you're used to.
Yes.
What about as a young adult?
So I had some trauma that I carried from my mother, you know, from before I was born. Then I lived through war zones, you know, four wars. And so I carried more trauma. But then I carried even more trauma when I was a young adult. And I think that carrying all this trauma made me really understand trauma and later to become an expert in trauma healing, really learning how to get to the core of trauma. But when I was a young adult, after I got married, then I was pregnant 8 times and 6 of those pregnancies ended in the 6 or 7 months. So I had 2 wonderful children, but I experienced a lot of loss. So then combining all the trauma I had in my childhood and then, you know, as a young adult already married, having more trauma, I think that it really made it so clear to me that I am just devoted and committed to help people heal deeply. It also made it very clear to me that talk therapy is not enough and that trauma is stored in the body. So I developed a lot of my healing philosophy based on my own personal trauma. And then with the years, helped so many people heal, really understanding the importance of connecting with the body and all the somatic work and all the soul work and how healing your soul and healing yourself, whatever it is, even if it's not trauma related, it needs to be an expanded process. A process that is much, much wider than just to have a conversation. And I think who I am today as a leader, as a healer, you know, as a mentor, really is based on all the things I was lacking and the trauma that I carried and was able to heal.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned this quite a bit in terms of trauma and feeling very disconnected from the situation or from what you needed to feel and to hear. But what about some of the positive influences from groups that you were born into? Is there something from growing up in Israel or from your travels? Yes. Because you didn't have a choice either because you had to go with your parents, right? So is there something there that also affected you on the resiliency resource side?
Exactly. So I was going to say resilient. I mean, yes, I became such a resilient person. And also growing up in Israel, it's so warm and it's so open. Everybody's so friendly. And I grew up in an environment where like neighbors will come and go and we'll spend so much time together. There's a lot of hospitality. And I think also grow up as an Israeli, there is a lot of mutual responsibility and mutual solidarity. So it gave me a lot of strength and I became a resilient person. I became a person who can face any challenges and have the courage. I think that if we look at the trauma and the anxiety that my mother brought to the table and I carried from her, but then from the other hand, how I had to like stand up on my feet, become resilient, become courageous. And that's something that stayed with me, like to be brave and to be willing to take risks, to step out of my comfort zone, to stretch myself, to challenge myself. I think all that also made me who I am today. So I think that some of my upbringing defined who I am. there were parts of it that also showed me who I didn't want to become or who I didn't want to be. But the fact that I am now sharing with the world a method, the Soulful Healer, that helps people become soulful, that's a gift that I received from all those years growing up, you know, the understanding of how important it is to connect to your soul and to live a soul-fueled life. So I really see it as a gift.
Mm-hmm. What about groups that you chose to belong to? So, you know, your profession, but there could have been interest groups or other groups that you wanted to associate with more. It could have been your neighbors, you know, as an adult, what were some of those groups?
Right. I think because I was so longing to connect, because I felt disconnected in many ways when I grew up. So I was looking for connections. So I joined spiritual communities, meditation communities. I studied color healing in England when we lived in Germany. In Germany, I learned different types of meditation. So I joined meditation communities. And then in the US, a different inner work and personal growth communities. And those communities really showed me the way of being part of those communities, how to reconnect with myself, how to do the inner work, which later became my mission, you know, and my purpose and what I do. But I think spirituality and personal growth communities really were very meaningful as a young adult.
Yeah, and you sought them out. Maybe initially you were just interested, but you might not have known exactly the significance of finding community in addition to solving your own issues so that you could transform from the trauma.
I search for meaning. I search for joy. But I think those communities found me. For example, many years ago in 1996, where I went on my first meditation weekend in Israel, I didn't even know what is meditation, but something in me just told me it was a coincidence. I saw an ad in a magazine. And then when I was there, just a little blown away from the idea of mindfulness and meditation, knowing nothing about it. Then I met someone who became a Reiki master. And now, fast forward 20-something years later, I have more than 3,000 people who went through my Reiki training. I'm a Reiki master. Who even thought that this random ad in a magazine that will lead me to a meditation weekend and I'll meet someone who will become my Reiki master, and then it will be part of my profession. So I really feel like I was connected to just internally. And, you know, when I say it now, it sounds very interesting to me, because one of the messages that I present in my book is the idea that if we find a way to connect or reconnect with our soul, then we can rely on our internal guidance system and navigate life with this inner connection. So relying on internal resources and the wisdom of the soul. And that's what I was seeking. I didn't look for it because I didn't know that that will be a solution. But looking back, I think it's just really interesting that now I'm empowering other people to do it, and belonging to those communities was what got me started on finding this inner connection that I was lacking.
Yeah, and the inner connection creates very deep bonds in a community as well, because you form very deep friendships with people when you're connecting on a soul level.
Exactly. And now I lead some communities, sisterhoods and communities, a community of professional, a community of Reiki masters, a community of women. And I think this need to belong to communities that was not met when I was growing up, then I was like so hungry for it when I was a young adult. And I was able to develop this sense of belonging and peace, which allows me now to hold this space and this container for others.
You know, as you were talking, it occurred to me that I think the two things that we're missing the most in the world are, you know, emotional connection. And with that comes the somatic understanding and working with our bodies instead of against them. And then the other piece is spiritual development and the development of the soul. And those things are the two things that you're developing, that you've worked on the most, that you've felt led to the most, and that have also brought you to where you are right now.
Exactly. Yes, I think that in terms of like my personality, then what I developed is the capacity to draw in emotional resources and spiritual resources and to really connect to this internal guidance system. And that's who I am, and that's how I live my life. And like I said in the beginning, I have this longing, really this craving, that there will be more and more people in the world that are living like that, with this inner connection and guidance from within.
Mm-hmm. Of being able to be open to the susceptibilities of the higher intelligence and to be able to be guided by intuition and to recognize that when you've been led somewhere, that it's significant I'm not sure that a lot of people know how to do that, but it sounds like you do.
Absolutely. Yes, I do. And I know you're interviewing me, but I'm curious to ask you, you've done so much research and about leadership and about the workplace. And can you imagine what difference will it be if people in the workplace will have this connection with their souls and will be guided not only by their intellect, but also by their intuition and body, the wisdom of their body, the wisdom of their soul, the wisdom of their intuition. So intelligence becomes just one of the different types of intelligence they would rely on.
Well, by a higher intelligence, that's a Baha'i term. It's the idea of connecting with the creator. It's not a limited intelligence the way we might understand it now. But yeah, I think that workplaces would be transformed. And we're both on the same mission, which is we really would like people's workplaces and their lives to be transformed by the things that they're currently blocked from receiving. It's part of our heritage. I mean, that's who we are. We're spiritual beings and we're emotional beings. We live in a physical body. It's part of our heritage, but we aren't always recognizing that. But I also wanted to ask you a little bit about the idea when you're working with the spiritual community or when you're working with a religious community, both sides can really miss the mark when they don't see where the emotional blocks are. And on the side of the emotional freedom, if people don't have the sense that they are also connecting with their soul, there's a piece that's missing too. So I'm thinking, for example, of people that are very devoted to their religion, but they're missing that mystical spirit soul connection. Or that they have that, but they're still denying their emotions and their body the ability to participate in that as a whole person.
Yeah, exactly. And first of all, maybe I have to say that in my book, in the chapter on spirituality, I talk about spirituality that can strengthen religion, but doesn't have to be related to religion.
Yeah.
You know, spirituality doesn't have to. But also, I talk in my book about spiritual bypassing. And I think that for spirituality to be positive and supportive, it needs to be aligned with some universal qualities. And sometimes spirituality can become a non-supportive and non-nurturing environment, especially when there are rules and what to do and what not to do. And instead of offering an opening and a wider perspective of endless possibilities, inviting the person to grow spiritually and personally and expand, then there are some spiritual communities that are limiting and are not aligned with universal qualities like love and kindness and others. And it's easy for some people to use spiritual principles to bypass connecting to emotions. Just the other day, I had a conversation with a client that just found meditation and mindfulness and was so passionate about it and shared with me how she started to meditate. And one day she meditated for 6 hours. And I said, you know, the real gift in meditation and spiritual work is to take it from the practice into life and not to use it as an escape.
Yeah, I agree with you. I really like that part about spiritual bypassing in your book. It's kind of along the principle of moderation. You know, anything taken to excess ends up being harmful. So, you know, 6 hours of meditation is maybe not going to help you participate with life and might disconnect you with a few things. In some contexts, it might be useful, but if you're doing 6 hours of meditation a day, what are you running away from? And if you are refusing to spend even 5 minutes in mindful practice in your life, what are you running away from? They're both running away from something that you need to address in your life to be more whole.
Exactly.
Let me ask you, psychologically, personality is what you've grown from your nature-nurture gift that you were given. Over time, your temperament usually remains the same, although there can be some drastic changes. Usually people's temperament is kind of who they are, and then they build on with personal things because they overcome obstacles, as you mentioned, or they don't, and then that also affects them. And they have experiences or educational opportunities. They either take them or don't. And so then that shapes them. So what would you say your temperament was that you came into the world with and was nurtured, maybe in spite of?
In spite, yeah.
Yeah. So,
right.
And then what have you grown into? Because at the moment you came into the world and started manifesting who you were, it was consistently silenced. So that could have been it. But what would you say is your natural temperament?
Right. So I think I'm a natural giver. And, you know, I mentioned my mom, but I didn't mention my dad. But my dad was the kindest person and the one who's always, always taking care of everybody around him. Really a kind soul. So I received this from him, and I think I was born with this natural ability to feel and generate compassion and kindness and empathy. It was always very natural for me. I remember even when I was very, very young, just feeling so much empathy for others that it felt sometimes overwhelming. And I truly remember how it felt. So I think that growing up with both parents that were serving others, you know, in different ways, but serving others, really developed a born sense of giving and being of service. But because the modeling I had in my home was taking care of others, but sometimes neglecting your needs or having no boundaries when helping others. So the personality I developed had to build on that and to continue and be a giver and be in service of others, but understand the importance of setting boundaries and caring for myself as I'm helping other people.
Mm-hmm. Taking on your own spiritual work, not the work of others, which is theirs to do.
Exactly.
So let me know about a time that you haven't already explained about where you experienced a culture shock and you just saw that what you knew was part of a culture and you hadn't maybe noticed that before.
You know, I wanted to say moving to US when I was 15, but I actually think that the biggest cultural shock when I was like, oh, that's a different normal, happened when, as a young adult, just got married, and after getting married and my kids were young, when my husband and I decided to move to Germany. And remember that I grew up in an environment that felt very unsafe and just surviving. There's so much war and terror and just people are constantly just trying to survive, you know, fight and flight. That's what I knew. So when we lived in Germany, suddenly I see the European culture where people really enjoy life in many countries. In Germany, definitely like 9 to 5, 5 o'clock, they leave the pen on the table, they go home. Actually, they don't go home. They go to have some beer after work. And you see them all like, you know, having fun and just feeling safe and feeling at peace. And it was like, really? Like you can live like that and without having to survive all the time. Now, when I say that, I think about a time even before we had the kids, when my husband and I just got married and we traveled to India. And in my book, in the chapter on spirituality, I share just a little story in the beginning of the chapter about my experience being in India and how I started my spiritual journey in a way there. And I think the culture of shock being in India for a few weeks, but especially seeing how people were happy or just satisfied with their situation. They could be very poor. You know, we stayed in houses where like we slept with them on the floor, but then we'll go to the market and bring home some food and cook. And there was something about them that was at peace and it was sacred and just natural happiness. And I think maybe those two cultural experiences, the one in Europe and the one in India, just showed to me that there is a different normal.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a normal you would like the whole world to experience.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe the combined simple spiritual understanding in India with the boundaries in Germany where people like take vacations and go on ski trips and just really living life and enjoying. Yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does it help anybody who is suffering for you to not enjoy an opportunity?
Exactly. But you know, when I think there's so many people that are suffering, that's part of the reason why I believe in the mission of people like me and like you to help people ease suffering. It doesn't have to be like that. And I think that one of the reasons why I love what I do is that I understand people's suffering and I understand trauma. And I know that we can make a choice how to move our life forward. And we don't have to allow the past and what we carry from the past to diminish our soul and stop us from, you know, living life to the fullest and enjoying the world.
And that matters coming from you, because if you had not suffered and everything had been easy for you, then it wouldn't mean much. But because you went through your own significant difficulties throughout your life, you can speak to how you're able to make a choice even in difficult situations. And it will be so believable.
Thank you for saying that. Yes.
So If you were giving some tips to somebody who is working with you, or you're working with a client or with a group, and you want to be at your best, what conditions allow you to be at your best? What do you need to be at your best in a work situation?
Like you say in your book, bring your soul to work, bring your body to work, bring your mind to work. Then I support that. I think that if each person, if we all start our day with a soul connection, even before we get to work, you know, if we spend even just like 15 minutes in the morning every day to connect to our souls, to connect to our body, to sit quietly with ourselves, to balance all the doing with being, and we start our day with an inner connection. And people will do it in different ways. There's so many practices, but just to really prioritize connecting with yourself internally in the morning before you start your day. And then you go to work, so you don't have to make an effort to be connected. You're already connected. It's like you charge your phone overnight, it charges in the morning. It's the same thing. It's a reset that you can do every day.
I know you're talking about your own personal insistence on that morning routine of connecting with your soul, which is so necessary. Right. But is that what you would need to be at your best, is that everyone else around you is also doing that same connection?
Right, right. Exactly. That's in an ideal world when all of us are doing it, right? We all come to work and we already are connected. But I think that this inner connection is really, really important. In my book, I present 6 keys for profound transformation. And each one of these keys is taking you through a process of this inner connection where you can be a whole and then you can be the best version of yourself. The first key is the key of empowerment. And with the key of empowerment, I help people to realign with their values, personal values, professional values, and the collective values of all soulful people. And I think aligning with the values and being connected with your attributes, which is all the exercises that I present in the Key of Empowerment, are really, really meaningful when it comes to like how to be the best version of yourself. That's a different way of connecting. It's not just connecting with your soul, but really align with your values and really align with your attributes. So when you wake up in the morning and you go to work, you remember who you are at your core. Mm-hmm. And this process of empowerment is really necessary.
So to be at your best, you need to have the opportunity and openness to help people align their values.
Yeah, align with their values.
If you can't do that, you're not going to be at your best, right?
Yeah, I think it's values and attributes.
Values and attributes.
Yeah, to really remember who we are, what are the inner strengths that we have, what are the qualities that bring to the table, and to remember those and right. align with the values, then we live as an empowered being.
That's the ideal, but I'm asking about you. So for you, if you're in a work situation where you cannot do that, you can't help others to align their values and their attributes, that would not be good for you. And if you have the opportunity to do that, that would help you to be at your best. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, good. So here's your soapbox moment. Other than promoting your book, I know you've already been promoting it. You might like to promote some aspect of it, but what would you like to promote?
So I would like to promote the Journey into the Soul. It's my signature experience, the one-time experience that I take people through. And I do it virtually. We meet for like 90 minutes and I take you through the Journey into the Soul. And I help you to receive guidance from within. So you can bring a question with you if you want to get clarity on something. But even if you don't bring a question, it's what's the spiritual lesson? What's the spiritual opportunity for you? What's the next steps? What's on your path? Just to really get clarity on your path that is not coming from the intellect. And the Journey into the Soul is a really good process also for people who have some imbalance, whether it's physical or emotional. They really want to get to the core, like on the deep level of their soul, like what is happening to me? How can I move forward with my life? So I would love as many people as possible to journey into their soul and receive the guidance from within. I truly believe that the world will be better. So that's what I want to promote, a 90-minute experience with me and the Journey into the Soul. And of course, to read my book and go through the 6 Keys for Profound Transformation.
Mm-hmm. So how would they sign up for one of these 90-minute sessions?
Oh, it's on my website, beaconsofchange.com.
Beaconsofchange.com. So that
yes.
be a way that people can get a hold of you and find out more about the Journey into the Soul process that you help them with.
Absolutely. Okay. And my book, Becoming Soulful, is available on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Becoming Soulful. I recommend it. It's a great book. I enjoyed reading it, and I'm going to go back to some of the parts that I wanted to reread.
Thank you.
So is there anything else that you'd like to say before we end the interview today?
Maybe just to read one quote from my book that I think is just one of the quotes that I love. Each of us is a beacon, a solitary flame with a soulful power to pierce the darkest night. Alone, we are whispers of hope in the silence. Together, we become a collective force that can transform the world. Mm. We have a world to change, and the change starts with us, guided by our soul.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you so much, McCall. This has been such a lovely experience.
Thank you so much for having me here.
In our interview, McCall Spiegelman recounted a childhood where Holocaust survival darkened and traumatized many of her early memories. One that stood out for me was the image of her mother pinching her to stop crying while telling her to put on a smile. From a background of personal pain, McCall transformed her suffering into healing for herself and others through traveling, social work, and coaching. Her organization, Beacons of Change, and her Soulful Healing Method help women and healing professionals connect with their soul to shine like beacons in their personal and professional lives. Here are some of my takeaways from our interview. 1. Even if your childhood experiences are painful, as an adult, you can heal by reconnecting to your body, emotions, and soul. 2. Travel and living in a different country can significantly impact your cultural and spiritual journey. 3. Your leadership style can be found by listening to your own inner promptings. And 4. Living spiritually does not mean we use spirituality as a way to escape life. To be authentic, we have to live our spirituality in the world. I enjoyed my conversation with McCall and hope to host her on an upcoming webinar. If you like this interview, please share it with a friend and then head straight over to our fan list to leave a review, a tip, or to support the podcast with a monthly contribution of your choice. To do that, go to shiftworkplace.com/podcast and click on the red box to leave a review or a monetary donation. Thank you in advance for your generosity. Thanks for listening, and may culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day.